Thanks, GP. You know, when you come up with a word and it's normally a word that you slave over and you prepare on. It's normally something that's happening deep inside yourself, like what you're going through yourself. And I feel this word is definitely for me. But as I've heard what Bronwyn was saying, what Marie was saying during communion, and what Ed shared on last week, I feel as though this is something that maybe more than just for me. So I'm hoping that we can take something from it collectively today, and that we can be challenged by what's being shared. I know Ed spoke last week about having the aroma of God and having the glory of God, and this week I'm trying to talk about how we can let that out, and we can just, boom, let it go. And if you're taking notes this morning, not texting on your phone, but I do, if you've got your phone out, that's fine to take notes. I won't judge you too much. My title of my message is Let It Fly. Let it fly. As Ed alluded to last week, I am going to actually be speaking out of 1 Samuel. And I've been going through there recently in my Bible readings. And it's a really cool book. It's got all these different characters in it. You've got these amazing people. You've got David and you've got Samuel. You've got Jonathan, really inspiring, good character. Like, you know, salt of the earth people that you'd say that's a person you want to take home to meet your mum kind of thing. And then you've got your Sauls and your Goliaths and your Eli's sons, who are kind of the opposite. So you've got all these different things that are playing out. But I'm actually going to pick it up from in 1 Samuel when Saul was the king, but Samuel was like, I'm not happy with what he's done, and he's kind of retired and given up on him, and God's turned his back on Saul, and God's called Samuel to go and find a new king. And so he goes out to Jesse's family, and it's all about the anointing of David. So we'll pick it up in 1 Samuel 16, verse 6, and we'll start there. And it reads, when they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, man, surely the Lord's anointing stands here. Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord. Must have looked pretty good. Like, he's probably kind of a Martin Koning kind of person. And you're like, whoa, just look at that specimen. But not just the looks of it, not necessarily the heart, because Martin Koning has a heart like David. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. Not Martin Koning, sorry, this man here. Martin Koning, you're a fantastic man. Carrying on. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And then Jesse called his next one and had him pass in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, the Lord hasn't chosen this one either. Jesse then had Shammah pass by. If you're pregnant, there are a few names here that you can use, you know. I'm just putting it out there. There's a few of you hapu here, so, you know, get amongst it. Shammah. Abinadab, Jesse's easy enough, but yeah. Nor has the Lord chosen this one, verse 10. Jesse had seven of his sons pass before Samuel, but Samuel said to him, man, the Lord hasn't chosen these. Must have been pretty confusing, eh? Like, I've come all this way. God said there's going to be someone here. He's like, what's going on? And he said, so he asked Jesse, are these all the sons you have? Oh, they're still the youngest, Jesse answered, but he's tending the sheep. Samuel said, send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives. There must have been some time if he's tending sheep. It's probably in the back paddock. And back in those days, he didn't have a four-wheeler to, like, blast home on. He was just, I'm not a farmer, but every week there seems to have to be a farm story. So this is my farm story, guys, you know, for all the farmers out there. You know, I'm a son of a farmer, but a poor son at that. So, he was in the farm, tending the sheep. So Samuel said, send for him, we will not sit down until he arrives. So he sent for him and had him brought him. He was glowing with health, because he's a farmer. He was glowing with health and had a fine appearance and handsome features, because he's a farmer. No, because he's a teacher. Then the Lord said, rise and anoint him. This is the one. So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. Samuel then went to Ramah. Pretty cool moment in David's life. if I don't mind saying so myself. Like, it's a pretty big moment, you know. But let's look at it from his perspective. An hour before Samuel turns up, what's he doing? Farming. Come on, guys. This is the answer today is farming. Always farming. He's out there just hanging out with the sheep, right? He's just chilling out there. And then he gets called to come in to his dad, and he's like, oh, sheesh, what have I done? Like, he's probably, you know, when you get told that you have to come see your dad, it's never a good thing. I don't know about your childhood, but for my childhood, when I was told, dad wants to see you, I know that it normally involved soul shoes, jandal, and time in the back room. And so David's there, probably freaking out a little bit. And then he's told that there's this holy man Samuel there as well. And he's going, oh, sheesh, I've heard stories of this man. Not only am I going to get the wrath of my dad's jandal, but I'm going to get the wrath of God, because this guy, he's like, he's down with God. So he turns up. He's a bit scared. But he brushes the dirt off his shoulders, comes in, looks healthy and respectable. And Samuel goes, you're going to be the next king of Israel. And right at that moment, he's probably going, whoa, what on earth is going on here? What's just happened to me? And then he goes, cool, go back out to the sheep. He's like, okay, cool. If I was to back out the sheep, I'd be thinking, was that a dream? Like, have you had those moments when you think, surely that was just a dream? But for David, this was such a life-altering moment. You think he was about, they say, between 10 or 15 at that age. And as a 10-year-old, I probably couldn't handle that very well. Or as a 15-year-old. Probably less as a 15-year-old than a 10-year-old, let's be honest. And what he did was he was just freaking out, and he just went out and chilled back in the field. But I can guarantee you one thing. He didn't just relax in the field. Like, he didn't just chill out in there. Like, David was a good man who used every moment he could to be the best that he could be. You know what I mean? What do we know about David? What were some of the things that he did? He killed Goliath. So that means he's probably, I mean, with his slingshot, right? So he's probably out there, and that's not just a fluke. He was out there practicing the whole time. What else do we know about David? Muso. I can guarantee you, being as talented as David does not come easily. To write however many songs he wrote in the Bible and then plus some, that takes time. It takes ages to write a song. He led all these 100 men who were disgruntled. He was a strong leader, and he had to know the land really, really well. He had to know for his herd, he would know where to take them so that they were watered. He had to know where to take them so they could go through ravines without getting enemies coming down and attacking and stealing all the herds. He had to know the place really well. A flock. No, it could have been something else, though. It wasn't just sheep. There were alpacas there as well. I've seen the pictures in the children's Bible. It's definitely a herd of alpacas. I've been to Peru, I know. No, I'm joking. I have been to Peru, though. I'm not joking about that. So he wasn't just in the field, just, you know, chilling out, playing some sweet tunes, singing Kumbaya. He was actually bettering himself the entire time he was there. You know, from that time that he was first anointed in secret with Samuel and his brothers and his dad, to the time when he was anointed as king over Israel, was about 15 to 20 years. 15 to 20 years where he had all this time. And he didn't just waste it. I know the moment that Samuel was there, that David would have been going, hey, this is one of those moments in life that is a life-changing moment. And we have those moments. You know, if something tragic happens, it's a life-changing moment. If you get married, there's a relatively life-changing moment. But then there's also these other life-defining moments that happen all the time, but we're not actually aware of them as they play out. You know what I mean? So, like, for example, the first time I talked to my wife, Chris, now wife, Chris, I actually can't remember it. At that very time, it wasn't a life-defining moment. However, from that conversation led to other conversations, which led to other conversations. And eventually those conversations led to putting a ring on it and 4 years on, my life has changed dramatically for the better. I wouldn't have actually at this time said, though, when I first talked to her, this is a life-altering conversation that we're having right now. I'm going to marry you, because that would have been a little bit weird, and that the story could have played out a little bit different. But even these little things that we kind of take for granted, these little moments, these moments in time that can change us, we don't grab them as much as we can. I mean, the simple thing is like a conversation, a little conversation, or a sending a text somewhere, or a friendly wave or a smile, or just turning up somewhere. I mean, that can change someone's outlook. Because it's up on there, but every moment holds potential, right? Every single moment we have potential. But I can guarantee, and this is a story of my life, unfortunately, most of that potential goes to waste. You think about that, eh? Oh, that's a bit heavy. But it's true. Every moment holds potential, but most of that potential goes to waste. You think about today or any other Sunday, like at church services. I can guarantee so much potential at these services actually go to waste. Because I know that there is time put into the worship. And imagine as if, as a community of people who are seeking God, imagine if we turned up and we didn't wait to the second song or the third song to be like, oh, okay, now I can lift my hands, now I can actually get into it. Imagine if we postured ourselves before we even turned up and go, you know what, as soon as we have the chance to get together and sing and bring in the glory of God, I'm going to be in there, I'm going to be part of that. But we kind of just go, oh, I'll just turn up. Imagine being ready before the first song's actually played. Imagine where we could go with that. Imagine in the speaking. Now, a lot of time goes into these messages, and I don't know about you, but my mind wanders so fast. Like, I'm just all the time. And all this time and effort that's gone into a lot of these messages probably falls to the ground instead of being planted in our lives and us thinking, going, how can I use what this person is speaking about and how can I let that change my life for the better for others? Imagine what would happen if we did that in worship, if we did that with the word. Imagine what would happen if at the end of the service we looked across the room and we saw someone who looked a bit down, who needed a friend, and we went across there and started a conversation instead of going, oh, sheesh, you know, I've got this to do and this to do and this to do. But imagine if we did that. You might meet your next best friend. You might meet your next... You never know. But why is it that we don't meet this expectation? Why don't we fulfill this potential? And like I said earlier, this is what I'm learning at the moment, and I'm hoping that you guys can learn something as well. Why is it that we don't tap into this potential? And I think the biggest cause of untapped potential is a reluctance to pay the price that goes with it. You know? There is always an effort and there's always a cost that is required for you to fulfill what you have been given, the potential you've been given. Now, recently I've been reading a book, and it's called The Last Arrow by a guy, Ewan McManus. He's a pastor in LA, and we actually got, just dropping a little bit, we actually got to go to his church while we're in LA. It was awesome, but his book is really powerful. It's called The Last Arrow, and the blurb reads this: when you come to the end of your days, you will not measure your life based upon successes and failures, right? All of those will eventually blur together into a single memory just called life. All your successes and failures become life. What will give you solace, though, is a life left with nothing undone. One that's been lived with relentless ambition, a heart on fire and with no regrets, you know? That's what, when we're at the end of our days, when we look back and go, whew, I lived a life on fire. On the other hand, what will haunt you until your final breath is who you could have been but never became and what you could have done but never did. You see, we all begin this life with a quiver full of arrows. Now the choice is yours. Will you cling to your arrows or risk them all, opting to live until you have nothing left to give? And the book goes in, it's got a whole bunch of chapters and comes at it from different angles. But the premise of the book is we've got these arrows, right? And we just kind of cling on to them instead of actually releasing them. And it comes out from the story in 2 Kings. And it will be up on the screen. And it's when Elisha is about to die, and there's a wicked king there at the time. But even the wicked king goes, you know what? I actually recognize that you're a man of God, and I want you to bless me. And Elisha goes, well, I'm a man of God, so here's the instructions. And he says to him, open the east window, he said, and he opened it. Shoot, Elisha said, and he shot. Then he said, the Lord's arrow of victory, the arrow of victory over Aram. Elisha declared, you will completely destroy the Arameans at Aphek. And then he said to him, take the arrows. And he took them. And he said to the king of Israel, strike the ground. And he struck the ground 3 times and then he just stopped. So the man of God, Elisha, was angry with him and said, you should have struck the ground 5 or 6 times. Then you would have struck down Aram until you would have destroyed it. But now you shall strike Aram only 3 times. Kind of a weird passage, eh? Kind of a weird passage. But as we unpack it, hopefully it can kind of make a bit more sense. You know, in that time, it was customary to shoot an arrow into the land that you were going to claim. So a king or the leader of an army, before they were going to take a land or take a battle or any ground, they would get an arrow and shoot it to say, that's where we're going. This is the land that we are taking. And that was the first part of it. If we can go back to that first verse, verse 17, thanks. Yeah. So this is the first part where it says, hey, look, this is the land that you're going, that God wants to give you, shoot. And then he shoots. And I love the analogy of an arrow. And now, I got my arts and crafts on this week, and I've actually made a bow and arrow, and I actually need this because I need 2 hands. Because I have a sweet bow and arrow right here. This took me a good 5 minutes to make, but it's quality, right? And I love this analogy of the bow and arrow because you've got your bow, your state-of-the-art $1,000 bow from down by the one-way bridge, and then you've got your arrow, which is a safety-first feature featuring Nerf bullets on the front because every boy needs some Nerf bullets growing up and as an adult. But so I'm not aiming for you, GP, just yet. I promise I'll let you know before I shoot it. However, I was talking about Martin Koning before, and I reckon I can get him from here. No. But with a bow and arrow by itself, it's actually a bit useless, right? I'm like, I'm going into battle. Ha! Ha! I can't defend myself. But it's not until with the bow and the arrow, we take the bow, and we actually have to place the arrow. And even then, it's a little bit, patu, it's a bit stinky. It's, you know, like, oh man, that's not very good. But it's not until we actually pull it back, we get intentional about what we're doing, we make our target. I'll try and shoot it this way because it's such a quality bow and arrow, I actually don't know which way it goes. and I'm not the most quality archer. I'm really doing it so you get the side profile because that's the most important part of the message. With our bow and arrow, it doesn't work until we aim, and until we actually bring some tension back to it, right? We can't actually use it until we've been intentional about moving it back. We aim. Even at the moment, it's pretty useless. Like a bow and arrow is not useful until... Oh, here comes the moment of truth. Until... Ah! We let it fly. Yeah, I was a little bit too excited about that. I'm sorry. Until we let it fly, a bow and arrow is useless. You know what I mean? And I think for us, we spend too long in 2 positions. Number 1 is in the position that I was at before, that celebrating or looking at where we've just sent the bow and arrow. Or number two, well, I cut a little notch into this one, but it's a little bit wonky. So either one, we're either looking at it, or number two, we're actually just in this position, but we're not ready to actually let it go. Because I think for us, we go, okay, I want to be prepared. I'm going to do this stuff. I'm going to, you know, try and make the most of this moment. But letting it go involves risk. Letting an idea go, actually putting it out there, saying, I'm going to take that land, involves that, sheesh, if I say this, then I'm going to have to follow through with this. You know, you don't start a battle by just going, why, I'm going to do this. But as soon as you fire that first arrow, it's like, game on. Now is the time that we are going to unleash some stuff that's going to happen. And I think for us in our lives, we're just here holding and waiting, but we're not actually ready to go, boom, game on. See that one, that was actually a bit straighter. But we're not ready to actually go for it. And I love the idea of the analogy as well, because it does take effort. Like, you can't just shoot from the hip. If you shoot from the hip, things can get dangerous. So, I don't know where this is. Oh, this is extra dangerous because of Nerf. No, I'll use the other one. Okay, that's safer. But if you just shoot from the hip and you don't aim or anything, you go, I'll try and do it. I'm going to try and do it really fast, and I probably won't be able to do it. I've done this once in my practices at home. If you just go, okay, there's something, oh, whack. When we shoot from the hip, it actually is dangerous. And I think sometimes we can kind of, sometimes we just go, you know what, this whole idea of letting it fly, I'm just going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that, but we don't actually put the effort into leaning back into what is actually being said. We don't take aim at where we're going. We just go, that's a good idea, boom, I'm just going to go for it. But we don't actually consult God and say, you know what? What is it that you're saying to me? How can I actually make this the best that I can be? Lean into it. Get good at what we're going to do, at our craft, at what we're doing. Establish those relationships. Pay the cost. Bring that back. And then let it go. You with me on that? Does that make sense? The other thing that I like about this, this passage was the next part. If you go to the next verse. Is when he starts to go to him, okay, now I want you to hit the arrow on the ground. And he just does it a couple of times, but then he gives up. And then he gets angry at him. And why is that? You know, to keep him with the theme of a bow and arrow, I feel as though some of us aren't actually getting our victories or aren't taking that ground because we're not actually willing to pull back hard enough into what God has for us. This is for me as well. We're not actually going to claim that land because we're not pulling back and we're not preparing ourselves. We're not counting the cost as much as we could until, and then we can take that ground. Because sometimes our arrows fall terribly short. Instead of going into that land that we like, God, I know you've got this promise for me, but I'm a bit too lazy, or I'm a little bit too shy, or I'm not actually willing to count the cost to get it to go all that way. The other thing that has made me think about with this book is God likes an empty vessel. And the whole book goes on about talking about how sometimes we have all these arrows. This is my quiver, by the way. It's not a cup, but just for now. You have to use your imagination and imagine it as your quiver. And we're like, oh, I've got this one other thing that I can do, but there's a cost to it. And if I shoot that arrow, then I've got nothing left. But you think about, there's another story that happened in 2 Kings with Elisha and the widow. And it's the story of how she had one jar of oil in her house. And then Elisha was like, hey, how can I help out? How can I bless you? He's like, well, we've only got one jar of oil. He's like, well, I'd like to kind of hook you up with some more oil. And so he goes, well, go collect some empty jugs and some containers. And she goes around all her neighbors and until she's got all these empty jugs. And through the power of God, Elisha's able to empty oil into all these containers. But unless they were empty, there was nothing that was going to go into them. And for us, we're going, oh, I'm just going to hold on to this last thing this last blessing that I've got, because if I let it fly, then what's going to be left for me? And God's going, man, you're doubting me like that? Because if you let it fly, there's more space for me to move in your life. You know what I mean by that? Does that make sense? Cool. Let's not question God, but let's be all in for everything that God has. In this part here, Elisha was annoyed. Oh, sorry, we can go back to the last one. Thanks. Elisha was annoyed at the king because he didn't grab everything that God had for him at that moment. Because he just shot an arrow out the window and said, hey, God is going to bring you that victory. And he's like, now tap it on the ground. And he was just like, okay, I'm done. And Elisha's like, look, this is, I'm the prophet of God at this moment, and I'm telling you to do this thing, and he's just going to do it half-heartedly. Whereas he's like, man, you want to be getting that arrow, and you want to be tapping that for all it's worth. Like, when God is moving, grab that. Like, as Marie was sharing before, we've got these moments, and if we're just going to be half-hearted about them, let's be in the moment and let's be intentional about grabbing everything that God has for us. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? But what have we got now? What have we got right now at this moment? Another book that I read a part of is one by Carl Lentz, and it's called Own the Moment. And it says, this is the blurb, or part of the book, sorry. And it reads, this is our challenge as humans, to make the most of what we do have, our arrows. I do not want to be fixed on the future that I miss the power of the present. I do not want to be so motivated on what's next that I miss the joy right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right. But what have we got right now? We've got this time to fulfill as much as we can. You know, potential is an incredible thing to be born with. Yeah? Like when you see a baby, like, oh, so much potential on them. When you see an 80-year-old and you go, so much potential. Not such a cute thing, eh? It is a tragic thing to die with, potential. If we go back to David, he was told by Samuel at the start, you're going to be the king, and go back to being in the field. He had all this potential, and he had all the stuff ahead of him. I mean, Samuel didn't tell him it's going to be 15 to 20 years. Samuel didn't tell him that the current king is going to try to assassinate you. Samuel didn't tell him that your army is going to be all these misfits, and they're going to be the ones who kind of get together with you. And those are the ones you're going to have to lead. Samuel didn't tell him that. He said, you're going to be the anointed one of God. Now go back to the field. And David had a choice. Go back to the field and just chill out and wait for God to make that all happen. Or no, go back to the field and take on every chance that he had to become the best that he could be. To embrace that calling that God had placed on his life. When I think of the words let it fly, and we think of David, I mean, the first thing that you kind of think of is Goliath, eh? Letting that stone fly. Boom. It wasn't a fluke, though, as we said before. That was through hard work. There was a honed talent that he had had through years wrestling, protecting his sheep, his herd, or his flock. It was years and years of effort that had gone into that moment. I mean, he'd wrestled lions and bears. That is a cool story, hey? Wrestle lion and bears. He didn't waste that time. Every moment that he had an opportunity to do something, he didn't hold on to that arrow. He wasn't just waiting. He was like, I'm going to let this thing go. Because imagine if David didn't let it go with Goliath. Imagine if David held on to those arrows. Imagine the whole story of God working through his people in Israel would have played out quite differently, eh? But our playing it safe doesn't let us live the huge life that God has for us. David didn't play it safe to protect himself. But he knew God, and that kind of kept him protected. It wasn't exactly the most safe places for him to be, but he was there. You know, there were two kind of things that David did every time he went into battle. First of all, he knew God, and he wasn't afraid to give it a go. He's like, he knew the heart of God. I mean, David was a man, like they say, a man after my own heart. As it's God was saying that, not me. So he knew God, and he just gave it a go. The second thing he did was he always gave credit back to God, and he praised God. So, what does all of this look like for us today? I mean, there's cool stories to have, some cool props even. But for us, we've got so much potential in this room, eh? Like, there are some talented people in so many different walks of life. And that's what's so cool about this church, about these people that we get to call our family. There is so many different strengths here. But what are some areas that you can see that there is land to be taken, but you're holding on to that arrow? In your life, just think for a moment for you. In your life, are there areas that you're going, there is land out there, and I know that that's where I'm going to be heading, but I'm not actually willing to give it a jam. And I feel as though God's kind of prompting, this is what he's been prompting me, and I hope he's prompting you as well, saying, man, Andy, or insert your name here, pull back, lean into it, don't just settle for a small little piddly shot, pull right back and lean into that bow, because you've got something big for you. Now, that's for you. Imagine this as a church, though. Imagine if all the people here, or wherever you call your home church, imagine if your home church community went, we've got land to take. As Bronwyn was saying earlier, we've got a community full of hurting people. Imagine if we just let hundreds of arrows into our community, start claiming some land, start claiming our families, start claiming our friends. I'm just going to leave it there, and I'll pass on to Pastor. But just think about that. What is it that we are holding on to, and what is it that we're not willing to let fly yet? Because I know that the closer we get to God, the more dreams he puts in our heart for us to be of greater purpose, yeah?
Thank you, Andy. Let's give him a clap for that.